This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We're coming to you today from the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show. For years, Charlottesians have viewed this show's arrival as a harbinger of a change in seasons. The show is full of flowers and the things you need to get your home ready for the end of winter and the coming of spring and summer. But this year's show also featured valuable information on how you can help yourself and the planet by becoming more energy efficient. Energy efficiency is on the top of many people's minds because of the economic crisis that we're in. Saving money on energy seems like a great place to cut the budget. Experts in Washington are looking toward new forms of energy to get the economy back on track by creating new jobs and lessening our carbon footprint. Well, there are lots of things that you can do in your own home to save money, energy, and the planet, and not all of them cost an arm and a leg. We're going to talk about some of the things that you can do this hour. And if you're prepared to spend some money now to save money in the long run, we'll give you some ideas on how you can do that too. And we're joined here in Liberty Hall at the park on this last day of the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show by three experts on the topic. For those of you sitting in our audience, on your left, we'll begin with Donna. Donna Strenkus is a registered architect and building programs manager at the NC Solar Center in the College of Engineering at NC State University. She's also the director and founder of the award-winning NC Healthy Built Homes Green Builder Program and a building plan design reviewer for both residential and commercial green solar buildings. You've joined us before. Welcome back to the program.
Great to be here, Mike.
Nice to have you with us. You can applaud. Keith Davis is president of Residential Technologies. That's a Charlotte firm dedicated to lighting control, solar energy, and special electrical systems and energy management control for homes. Mr. Davis has more than 25 years' experience working in the home technology arena, and I'm told that you have a booth here, don't you?
That's correct.
I'm told that your booth here is something to see.
It is. We hope you come by sometime.
I tried to get by before we started taping, and I didn't have a chance. Well, I'll do it right after the show's over. And Laura Elam is a project manager at Appalachian State University's Energy Center, which focuses on promoting residential energy efficiency by working with both builders and homeowners on no-cost and low-cost ways to save energy. She's also the co-author and designer for the Affordable Passive Solar Plan Book for North Carolina. That sounds like an ambitious project.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Nice to have you with us. So, here we are in the middle of an economic downturn where people are really watching their pennies and kind of worried where the next dollar may or may not come from. Is now a good time to be thinking about doing things around the home that may cost money in the short term but save money in the long term? I'm not sure who to ask this question to, but I'll start with you, Donna.
I'll give it a shot. Sure, it's a great time, particularly to start thinking about it and start pulling things together. Making a list, thinking about all the different potential things that you can do, and then sorting them through and sort of organizing them so that you don't end up just doing something and then finding out that you have to redo it later. So I'm a big proponent of sort of organizing all the potential things you might could do. We call it integrated design or integrated thought process and planning. So you want to do that, and then you can start making your plans to do them. And you may find when you start making your lists that you're going to need a professional for some things, but there are some things you can do that are not going to get in the way. And I'll just give you a real quick one.
Sure.
Since you might want substance.
We kind of do, yeah.
Yeah. What about surge protectors? Something really simple. You could use surge protectors to actually deal with some of the appliances in your homes that have those little lights on them that never go off. We call them phantom or vampire loads. And they're actually using energy all the time, even when you're not using the appliance.
Let me ask you a question, because I know that the little chargers that we have for cell phones and electric cordless razors and things like that, when they're plugged in, but they're not plugged into the appliance, if they're just plugged into the wall and the little pigtail is waiting to be plugged into the appliance, are those chargers using energy too?
Yes.
Very much so.
Yes.
Really?
That's why if you put a surge protector in the wall that has a switch on it and you plug all your little chargers into that surge protector, then you can just switch it on and off with the rocker
And Keith, I know that you do a lot of home automation systems, which can range in price from very little to a lot.
That's correct.
And if you wanted to do the lot, which mm-hmm. controls lighting and home theater and temperature controls all over the house, is that something that ultimately raises the value of the home, or are they so complicated that somebody coming into your house to buy your house with all this mm-hmm. fancy schmancy stuff in it would go, oh my God, I can't work that, so I won't buy this house. Does it raise the value?
We've seen over the years that a lot of people have been intimidated because it has become too complex. Mm-hmm. So we try to make it so that it is simple to use with one remote control or one touch screen so that you don't have the dozens of systems out there. And yet over the long haul, you're saving energy, making it much more simple to use and doing it affordably. We feel like that will be a big driver in the energy savings field in the years ahead, to let technology and electronics do it for you so that the home responds to the state of you either being there on vacation or I'm at work, mm-hmm. and that way it's all done automatically.
And when Donna was talking about these power strips so you can turn things on mm-hmm. and off, you were nodding your head in recognition of all the power that goes to waste in a home. Do your systems help prevent that or reduce that, or do they add
yes.
to that?
Yes, we can do that because we can now take a switch that's controlled and clicked. There cuts that whole power strip off. And so when I'm not home and I don't need my cell phone charger activated, there goes that cell phone charger and the one for my wife's cell phone charger, and as you said, here, there, and there. And so we're taking milliwatts of load off the system, mm-hmm. but over the long haul, that adds up pretty quickly.
Okay. And Laurel, you wrote the book or helped write the book on passive solar energy, but you also work for the Appalachian State Energy Center. There must be all kinds of things that people can do. So what I'd like to ask you to explore with us is, if you were the average person who is concerned about money, but you're also concerned about the environment, and you'd like to start saving energy and therefore money around the house, where would you begin without spending a lot of money to begin?
I would begin actually with the biggest cost in your home is your heating and cooling system. So the easiest thing that you can do is go to your thermostat and turn it down. Turning your thermostat down 1 degree can save about 2% on your energy bill.
Really?
So absolutely. So just engaging yourself, whether you have a programmable thermostat or not, just by turning down your thermostat, you can save a significant amount of money each week.
Now, I've heard two schools of thought on these programmable thermostats, and I have one. I put it in myself. I'm so pleased that I could do it. But if you let the temperature drop overnight because you're sleeping and you want it to be cool, and then you set it so that at 6 o'clock in the morning the temperature goes back to a comfortable living level, and maybe it goes back down when you're not in the house during the daytime and it comes back up just before you go to work, mm-hmm. doesn't it cost money to keep bumping the temperature up?
But overall, if you just lower that thermostat for that period of time when you're not at home, it's going to save you. I mean, yeah, your system's going to have to cut on and run and get it back up to that temperature, but just lowering it down when you leave home, you know, and they recommend, you know, thermostat settings in the summertime of 78 degrees and in the wintertime. I know that's shocking to some people, but you just
wow.
have, yeah.
Why have air conditioning?
Right.
So 78 in the summer and what in the winter?
68.
68.
Mm-hmm. I keep my house at 58 and wear a sweater.
Wow. You must be really glad that spring is here.
Right.
We're just about here. Donna.
Well, I just want to add to sort of back even Laurel up even more. What happens is our new HVAC systems, the longer they run, the more efficient they become. So if they're actually trying to ramp up larger temperatures, they have to run longer. So they actually get to a level where they're running at a more efficient level. So the use of the programmable thermostat causes you to run your system for a longer period of time. So in reality, that actually adds to the efficiency.
And when you say the newer systems, how new does new have to be?
Well, at minimum, about, I guess it was 2 years ago, the federal standards were changed. And before that, most systems were around 10, what they call SEER, which is seasonal energy efficiency rating. And now it's required that they be 13 SEER. And most people are using, I'm seeing most people install 14 to 15 SEER systems. And they can't, if they're running a very short period of time, they actually are not going to get to that efficiency rating.
If we just talked a little bit, you wanted to say something? You wanted to add
well, I just wanted to bring up the fact that the Recovery Act actually extended the tax credits for if you did need to upgrade your heat pump. So I believe now you have to get at least a SEER 14, and you can get up to a 30% tax credit up to $1,500. So if you do have to replace your system and you choose to get one of these efficient heat pumps, that now these tax credits have been extended through 2009 and 2010.
Okay.
So, you know, like Donna was saying, you know, to make your priority list, I mean, that could be something that you have to wait on because it is a higher expense. But in the next 2 years, if you can take advantage of that tax credit, you should.
I started with you, Laurel, by asking what the minimum you could do to make your house more energy efficient without spending a lot of money, and we've gotten ourselves all the way into replacing your HVA system to save money. Is that where you would begin if you have money to spend and you really want to make a dent in your overall bill down the road? If you wanted to spend a lot of money, where would you start?
That's where I go.
Yeah, that's where, I mean, that's a good place to start. But you have to look at your building shell as well. And if you need more insulation and if you need to air seal, you know, having a really efficient heat pump is not very smart if your house is very inefficient. So you have to seal up and make sure that your home is efficient before
you.
How do you know?
How do you know if your home
well,
is efficient
you can,
or not?
You can do a little detective work on your own and go down in that crawl space or go in your basement and look at the insulation or poke
the
around
attic.
Your attic mm-hmm. and look at the insulation and in places where air might be leaking in. Mm-hmm. Or you can have someone come in and do a professional energy audit.
We're recording this on the last day of the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show on Sunday. And as I walked around one of the display floors, there were several solar energy displays. And we've done a couple of programs over the years on solar power, and every time we do it, it seems that solar power is becoming less expensive to deal with and to install, and more efficient. You get more bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm.
Solar power, is it practical for the average homeowner, and what should their expectations be? Should we use it for electricity production, or should we use it simply to heat water? And what should our expectations be in this area?
I would start with solar hot water. I would start with heating water. That actually, there are federal tax credits and state tax credits out right now that virtually cut the price of that in half. So a typical system for a four-person home might be around $6,000. Once you do all the tax credits, it'll probably be less than $3,000. And if you're also replacing your hot water system at that time, you know, a good hot water system is probably going to cost you $1,000, so really the upgrade cost is only around $2,000 or so. So you're really, and probably for most of our state, somewhere between 50 to 70% of our hot water will then be free.
So this really does make sense if you have some cash to put out up front.
Yeah.
And I know that, Keith, your company does this, and I want to talk to you about that
okay.
in a second. We have to take a break. We're coming to you from the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show at the Merchandise Mart or the Park now. Keith Davis is with us. He's the president of Residential Technologies. Donna Strenkhouse is with us. She's with the North Carolina Solar Center. And Laura Elam is with the Appalachian State Energy Center. And we're going to talk about all kinds of ways through the course of this program that you can start saving money by saving energy, and ways to do it from small ways to big ways. And we have an audience here, and they can feel free to ask questions as we go through the rest of this program as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Hope you're enjoying this pre-recorded edition of Charlotte Talks this morning. We'll get back to the program in just a moment. Programming funded in part today by Ray Ward, Creative Marketing Communications, offering advertising, public relations, interactive media, and direct marketing services to businesses throughout the region. On the web at rayward.com. Coming up Monday on Charlotte Talks, job hunting in today's economy. In an encore edition of the show, we'll talk with career experts about how job seekers can be more employable in today's tough economic conditions and what jobs are really out there right now. We'll also talk with career counselors and see what they're telling their students who are about to graduate and enter this economic climate. That's Monday morning at 9 on Charlotte Talks here on 90.7 FM, WFAE. More of our green living discussion in just a moment.
The Friday News Roundup. President Obama signs what he calls an imperfect omnibus spending bill. He reverses a ban on federally funded stem cell research, and the stock market shows signs of life. The Diane Rehm Show, Friday.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on Listener Funded, 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
We're back at Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're coming from the Charlotte Southern Spring Home and Garden Show on the last day of the show with three experts on saving money and saving energy. Donna Stankus, I've given you an extra R in your name, I'm told, is with us. She's the Building Programs Manager for the and Director of the Healthy Built Homes for the North Carolina State Solar Center. Laurel Elam is Project Manager of Appalachian State University's Energy Center. And Keith Davis is President of Residential Technologies and a couple of other companies that deal in all of this. And I know that those companies, those subsidiary companies or the parent company, I'm not sure which it is, deal with solar energy as well as wind power and geothermal power and hydropower. Now, Charlotte's not a good place, I would think, for wind power.
No, it's not. I'm afraid not.
Not a good place for hydropower, unless you're Duke Power.
That's correct. They've got that wrapped up.
So can we use geothermal in Charlotte?
Yes.
And how effective is solar? But go ahead.
All right. Yes, on the geothermal, because the Earth's temperature below the frost line tends to be a constant between 50 and 60 degrees. It's a perfect place to draw heat out of rather than using a heat pump to draw heat from the air, which we've done for years. We can now draw it from the soil. And so during the wintertime, you can actually draw heat out. During the winter, summer, it reverses. You take that hot air that's coming in your house, you cool it, and that heat gets pumped back into the earth. Some people would even liken the earth to being a bank where you can deposit and withdraw heat from because it is there constantly for your use.
Do we know that? Is it FDIC insured?
No, I don't think so.
Do we know that that bank is healthy?
Well, I suspect that bank will be here for a long time.
So is this something, this geothermal energy, is this something that people can retrofit their homes for, or is it something that you really should think about only if you're building a home from the ground up?
No, it's fully retrofittable because you're going to take maybe possibly a gas-fired air handler, or furnace, we would call it, replace it with a heat pump that draws that heat source from out of the ground. Now, there is some work to be done out in the yard. Obviously, we've got to put some way of collecting that heat from the soil, which could be an open trench, several wells, from a pond. While there's excavation being done, there can be piping laid in the soil. So it's not a minor renovation, but it can be done to an existing home as well.
Now, Laurel just told us a few minutes ago that in the wintertime, she keeps her house at 60...
I keep
58,
my house at 58.
At 58.
I know.
So, if it's...
I have dogs, though. They keep the house warm.
Okay. If it's a three-dog night for you.
Exactly. I have three dogs.
If it's 25 degrees outside, and the ground temperature is 50.
Below the frost line, it is still 55 to 60 degrees.
So there's some heat in there in comparison to 25 degrees, but it won't get you to 80 or 78 or 75, will it? Will it?
Yes and no. There will still be times where we will need to rely upon a supplementary heat source. In the early days, that was electric strips. Today, you can use natural gas, propane, much more efficient electric strips to add that extra little something you need to get past that point.
What about solar energy and using solar to get yourself off the grid or partially off the grid? And so I've talked to some people who've gotten themselves not only off the grid, they feed power to the grid and make money on it. But if you have, say, a 2,500-square-foot house, three bedrooms, two and a half baths, typical suburban house, how big does your solar array have to be? How much money do you have to spend to put that on the roof or wherever you're going to put it to get yourself off the grid or to power your house for a good amount of the time that you need electricity?
Well, there's so many variables in the load that the house can present. I say, how many square feet of roof surface do you have? How much real estate can you afford to put panels on the roof or in the yard so that we've got a good southern exposure at an ideal angle to generate the most power as possible? Because you may only have enough room for six panels. Well, that's all you're going to get. But you may also have enough for 40. So it depends there very much.
You're tap dancing around my question.
Okay.
Can 25? I go there?
Sure. Yeah, let Donna start.
Go ahead.
Well, I work at the Solar Center, so to me, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to make your house as efficient as you can possibly make it. You've got to deal with all the insulation. You've got to use as little kilowatt hours to begin with from the electrical utility as you can before you go to solar electricity. But once you do, once you're down in that 6 to 7 kilowatt hour range, then to completely get yourself off the grid, you're probably talking somewhere in the neighborhood of $70,000 to $80,000 or $90,000 if you're that efficient. And 6 to 7 kilowatt hours is a pretty efficient house.
Yes, very.
$90,000. What happens when you add in the tax credits you talked about in the last segment?
That can cut it by, you know, in North Carolina, there's now the cap has been removed. Mm-hmm. So you can get 35% of that back, whatever you've spent. And then on a national basis, you can also have 30% of it back, federal. So you can get a pretty good amount of it back, about 50 to, but you're still going to be putting out probably $40,000 to $50,000.
Does it make sense to do it?
Well, it does for some people because they're so far away from the utility grid that the actual pulling of the utility grid to that house is going to be more expensive than what we just talked about. But for other people, it makes a lot more sense to actually connect to the utility grid, maybe provide some backup power in case the utility grid goes out, so that and that whole priority thing comes up again because you prioritize what you want. You want to make sure you're getting water pumped to your house. You want to make sure your refrigerator works. You want to make sure you have some emergency lighting. So you sort of prioritize, what are those things I want when all the when the utility grid doesn't work? Uh-huh. And you know, maybe I can go without drying my hair for a while, but I probably can't go without fresh water.
But then don't you have to rewire the house so that your refrigerator is on the solar and
They have these inverter things that, that converts it from AC to DC. So you can do that. But it's not the entire house that has to be rewired. It's a unit that you put in your house.
We typically will take what we call essential loads and put them on the grid panel that comes off the inverter so that it is always live.
Is this a good place for solar power? I mean, Charlotte, North Carolina?
Yes, indeed.
You say absolutely?
Yes,
absolutely.
Indeed.
We get enough sunny days. What happens when it's a cloudy day or we have a week of rain? What happens then?
Well, on a cloudy day, production is limited. It still is producing. On the rainy days when there is no sunshine, of course, our production drops off very much. Mm-hmm. But if you'll look at the maps of solar availability, we'll see particularly Charlotte and this part of the North Carolina has a lot of sun and light resources that can be used fairly constantly. Not every day, but constantly.
Are these systems, these solar systems, the kinds of things that you can begin small and add to over time so you don't have to do it all with a lump sum? Or in other words, if you started with two or three solar collectors and you didn't get off the grid, you just supplemented the grid, and then 5 years from now you have a little money and you want to put five more solar collectors, can you do that?
Yes, very much so. They can be built in modular building blocks, and the inverters are sized to match the block. So you could say, I'm going to do 3 kW this year, and next year I'm going to do 3 kW and 3 kW, and just keep adding and adding to the system.
Are people doing this? How many people in North Carolina have started to move, or in South Carolina for that matter, have started to move toward some kind of solar power for heating hot water, for making electricity, et cetera?
John?
Well, the last time I saw figures on this, which was probably about 2 years ago, because we see the tax credit figures that come through the Department of Revenue for North Carolina, it looks like there's probably about 1,500 people a year doing this sort of thing. So that's and that was a couple of years ago. And I would expect, considering the number of companies that have come into the North Carolina over the last 2 to 3 years, that we are seeing a doubling or a tripling of that.
And given the new administration's push toward renewable energy sources and the encouragement of that through tax credits and other things, will we see more of this, do you think, as we go along in the next 8 years, 5 years, 4 years?
I think it's absolutely true. I think the tax credits help, but I think as the technology is installed more, we have more businesses doing it, such as EnergyWise and Residential Technology. When we have more of those companies doing that, then it becomes actually becomes less expensive. Because they start to compete with each other, just like regular old capitalism.
Yeah. Let's go back. I'm sorry.
And silicon, the price of the principal material of the panel should drop in the next 2 to 3 years because there's now more worldwide supply of silicon than ever. And Intel and AMD are not sucking up all the need for it to make chips.
Isn't silicon just sand?
Isn't yes.
There sand everywhere?
Yes, but this is a very purified sand, okay. Very processed.
Right. But let's talk about some really inexpensive things that we can do to start saving money and saving energy and being more friendly to the earth. And one of those areas is lighting, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And you can do that by turning lights out, but they're also encouraging us, in California, they're going to ban incandescent light bulbs in, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, something like that? And they're encouraging us to convert to fluorescent light bulbs, and they're all over the stores now, these fluorescent bulbs, and to LEDs, light-emitting diode bulbs, which, to me, I don't think that they have quite perfected the technology on those. They say they now put out warm white light, but I just bought, yesterday, some of these light bulbs and screwed them in, and it's pretty cold, and pretty dim, actually. Talk to me about whether this is a way to go. Fluorescence, Laurel, I believe, have their own little problems. We have to dispose of them in certain ways. So is that really the way to go? These things are full of mercury.
Well, they have about 4 milligrams of mercury on average
per
bulb.
But that adds up over time.
It does add up over time. But if you think about a thermometer, the old thermometers have about 500 milligrams, just as a comparison. So if that one, if a thermometer ever broke on you, you're exposed to a lot more mercury if your compact fluorescent light bulb broke. It is recommended, if you do break a compact fluorescent light, to leave the room for 15 minutes to let those particles disperse and then clean it up. And I did a little bit of research before I came, and you need to dispose of your light bulbs properly as well, because they do have mercury, which can get into the streams and the waterways and that sort of thing. And if you go to charmec.org, I saw 4 different locations around the Charlotte area where you can dispose of your light bulbs. But the advantages outweigh, I think, you know, the disadvantage of the mercury, because they use a quarter of the energy. They last 5 to 10 times as long, and you know, it's just the same thing as solar panels. The price has gone down and the efficiency has gone up. So they're just—it's a good investment for your home.
Donna,
on the mercury issue, our smokestacks that actually create energy to run our homes actually release a lot more mercury than the CFL does. So we're still putting mercury into our atmosphere. It's just pick your direction.
And what about these new LED lights? These LEDs are what those little red and green and blue lights on our appliances are. They're just light-emitting diodes. Mm-hmm. They're not incandescent bulbs. And they don't use, they use hardly any energy at all. But have they gotten those to the point, aside from my recent criticism, have they gotten those to the point where they're worth investing in and putting in your home?
I think they're getting closer. You know, they're still with the screw-in bulbs. They still have some work to do, in my opinion. And it's going to be the same thing with the compact fluorescent. They're going to get better. The price is going to go down. But one simple way that you can start is buy LED Christmas lights. You know, they're available now on the market at a very competitive price. And that's just, you know, one thing. If you like, you know, putting a lot of Christmas lights on your home, go with the LED Christmas lights to start with.
I bought a 40-watt LED bulb.
Mm-hmm.
It's 40 watt. It's the equivalent of a 40-watt incandescent.
Correct.
I think it's like less than a watt. And it said yesterday on the package that it costs 27 cents a year to operate that light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was.
I mean,
that
really is significant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What about the energy savings? I mean, is that as significant as the money?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, if a compact fluorescent loses a quarter of the energy of an incandescent, I'm not sure, maybe a tenth or even less than that an LED light would use over an incandescent.
Now, you have a company that installs home automation, and among the things that home automation systems do is help you dim the lights.
That's correct.
That's for lighting beauty. That's for, like, theatricality. But does it save money?
Yes, it does.
If you take a 60-watt bulb and dim it and let it run, does it use considerable less energy?
Yes. We've even seen that we've shown in our booth and on display that we can dim a light to 90% of its effective brightness. It has virtually no loss of lumens. In other words, how much brightness is it out there? And yet that point saves 5% of its energy. At 20% reduction, you do see a dimming of the light fixture, but you're now saving between 12 and 15% of the energy cost. Typical American home, 14% of your energy cost goes to lighting. So if you start saving a little here and a little there with a dimmer, whether it's a fancy electronic one or one you can go to Lowe's and buy, it's a good investment of your money.
You must hate fluorescents then.
There is a problem there, yes. Compact fluorescents, as a rule, are not dimmable. Those that are don't really respond quite as well to the dimming as an incandescent does. The LED probably will, and yet that's still some day in the future.
So would you recommend, the three of you who deal with this every day, would you recommend that those of us go out wholesale, big scale, and replace all of our incandescent bulbs with these CFLs and LEDs as appropriate, or would you still stick with some incandescents? We're being lit by them right now.
That's right.
In my home, I have 100% CFLs, and it basically cut when I did this about 12 years ago. I still have a few bulbs that I bought 12 years ago that I'm hoping will eventually run out because they don't do as well as the new ones do as far as coming on quickly. But they last for forever. That's a really great thing. And the other thing that happens is it cut my bill by almost $50 a month. So, you know, you have to think about the fact that it cut my bill also means that I was using less energy, which meant that our power plants were creating less energy, and if we all do that, it makes a huge difference.
We have a question in the audience I want to get to, but very quickly, what do you do for all those three-way lamps that people have in their homes when you want to replace them with a fluorescent? There is no three-way switch, three-way position on a fluorescent. What do you do? Get rid of the lamp?
Screw it in anyway.
Yeah.
It'll still work.
All right. Let's go out here to the audience. Hi, welcome.
Hey, I'm Mario from Mooresville. I was just curious if you could discuss skylighting.
Skylighting?
Skylights.
Open to the sun, skylights.
Yeah.
Good idea?
I love skylights out on a porch or in any area that is unconditioned. But once you bring a skylight into a conditioned area, one of the big issues is that you have a great place to do a lot of heat loss that will probably outweigh the light that you're replacing with it, and in fact could cause some overheating issues as well. So you have to be very careful about how you use skylights. Now, when you talk about passive solar and replacing electric light with natural light, that's a great thing to do, but I like to do it vertically with maybe what we call clear stories. A real high windows that have good shading, and therefore you're not going to get overheated or undercooled.
So you don't like the idea of a skylight in the bathroom because it's always on, essentially, and can create heat out of the summertime.
It's not about the always on. It's about the heat loss and the heat gain that you're going to get in the summer.
What, and in 30 seconds or less, what about those films that you can put on your window to reduce both UV rays and also the heating and cooling?
I think those can be a really good solution for some people who don't otherwise need to replace their windows.
That's Donna Stankus. She is the building programs manager for NC State Solar Center. Laurel Elam is with us from Appalachian State University's Energy Center. And Keith Davis, president of Residential Technologies. We're coming to you from the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show at the park. We're coming right back, and we're going to concentrate on some of the things that are at the show and how you can save money and energy by doing some of the things or not doing some of the things they're trying to sell you here in a moment.
We'll get back to Charlotte Talks in just a moment. This was a pre-recorded program for WFAE, so we're not taking any phone calls this hour. Our programming funded in part by Executive MBA Weekend, Evening and Global One MBA programs at UNC for working professionals, presenting an information session in Charlotte, Monday, March 16th. Registration at 1-877-UNC-EMBA. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the Weekly News Roundup, a look at national news in the first hour. Diane will be joined by a panel of journalists for a discussion of the week's top stories, including President Obama signing what he calls an imperfect omnibus spending bill. He also reverses a ban on federally funded stem cell research, and home foreclosures are rising, but the stock market is showing signs of life. The News Roundup. It's up next at 10 on the Diane Reams Show, here on 90.7 FM WFAE. Back to our conversation about green living and being energy efficient in just a moment.
I'm Chet Riley. I listen to NPR because I really, really like the way they treat the news. I like the diversity. It's not sensationalized. It's not a hype. It's the straight news and the straight facts. It's current, and it's done very, very well. NPR is my source every morning.
Let NPR's Morning Edition help you understand the whole story. Weekdays from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
We're back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're coming to you from the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show with Keith Davis, Donna Stankus, and Laurel Elam. And we have another question from our audience. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Meredith. I'm also from Mooresville. I'm curious, is there any resources out there for people who are interested in maybe doing some solar panels in a do-it-yourself manner, or is it something that's better left to professionals?
Great question.
All right, let me address that. Mounting the panels is nothing more than a mechanical process. But you got to use safety procedures, and that, you're going to be on a rooftop. You're going to be working on heights. The drawback is it is an electrical power generation system, and by North Carolina law, you must be a licensed electrical contractor to do that. Now, most utilities and localities will allow a homeowner to do their own electrical work. And if you want to do that, I would touch base with your local electrical inspection authority and ask them the procedures. Here in Charlotte, you have to pass a test. In other localities, they may say, yeah, go for it. So it's not for the shy, that would be for sure. But it could be done. I'm not going to say it's not going to be.
Because there is an interface someplace in the house where you interface with the grid.
Very much so.
And that's dangerous.
Yes, it is. It's 120, 240 volts AC.
Very dangerous. I will say at the Solar Center, we strongly suggest you don't install them yourselves. And that if you're using solar hot water, you don't install that yourself as well. Because, again, that's a plumbing. Mm-hmm. You need a plumbing license for that particular installation.
All right. Let's go back to our audience.
I'm Gene from Mint Hill. And we're interested in solar for water heating. Hot water heating, and I'm sure you're going to say that's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
But you do need to check your orientation and make, is your home properly oriented? Within 45 degrees east or west of south, you can really pretty much get great, it doesn't really cut your resources. So as far as the efficiency of the panel, you might, if you're 45 degrees off of true south, you might lose 5%, but it's going to be a very small amount, especially with solar hot water. That's very different for passive solar, but solar electricity and solar hot water, both within 45 degrees, you should be just fine.
If there's passive solar, is there active solar? What's the difference?
Active solar is basically solar electricity or solar hot water panels.
So in solar hot water heating, you're actually pumping water into your collectors on the roof where the sun heats it up and then it goes back into your tank? How does it work?
Well, you can do it by pumping water in. You talked about this earlier, Keith. But you can do it by pumping water directly in. But usually in North Carolina, we don't do that. We use a glycol solution so that there's an indirect heat exchange between the glycol solution and the water that's actually heated.
So it's antifreeze. You're putting antifreeze up there.
Yes, it's not quite antifreeze. It's actually a little less toxic than what antifreeze is.
What about these tankless water heaters that give you instant hot water? I know they're expensive, and I know they're expensive to install, but over time you save energy, I'm told, and you save water. Do you save energy? Are they energy efficient? Is that a good idea to do?
Go ahead, Don.
I was just going to say they can be. It's sort of what we see is that if you have natural gas to your home, that's usually the best choice is a natural gas tankless. But an electrical one, that you had to be a little more careful with.
Okay.
And I think Keith had more to
add. We installed one already here in West Charlotte, and it had to have a 100-amp supply to feed two big heating elements. And so it's not like the old water heater is a 30-amp circuit. Now we're looking at 100. So it's going to have a tremendous power draw, but for very short periods of time.
What about these instant hot water systems that go under the kitchen sink? They're very small. They come out of a separate tap, separate faucet.
Right.
Are they worth the investment in terms of energy savings and water
savings?
They can
be. It depends on how far away your hot water heater is from your kitchen. So if you're going to, it could save you a lot of water. It
takes me a minute, minute and a half in the wintertime to get hot water to the kitchen.
Right. Which is usually about 4 gallons.
Yeah. So it makes water savings.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Allie. I'm from Concord, North Carolina.
How old are you, Allie?
I am 11.
Okay.
All right.
By pretty much making your house go completely green, how much electricity would that save you?
Well, now, she wants to know, if you made your house completely green, how much electricity would that save you? And, Laurel, you helped design and build the North Carolina first zero-energy home. Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, sort of. I mean, I would, you know, if you went and made your home completely green and, you know, did work on your thermostat and on your building shell and your lighting, you know, you could save, you know, 40 to 50% depending on where you were starting with the home. But the zero-energy home was actually a demonstration project that we did with Habitat for Humanity in Hickory, where we installed solar electric panels and solar thermal panels. The home was enrolled in the North Carolina Healthy Built Homes program, and
and it was passive solar.
It was passive solar.
And when we say zero
geothermal
energy,
heat pump,
zero energy, a euphemism or a wish?
It is. I mean, it's you know, it's basically the concept behind that, and that's a grid tied system that's selling back the power that's generated through the NC Green Power program, and so they're getting 18 cents a kilowatt hour for the power that's produced. And so what you're trying to do is design the home to be very efficient, and then equal out the power that's used in the home, just the electricity used in the home, to the solar panels on the roof.
We're doing this show from the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show, and if you walk around the display floor of the housing part of it, not the flower part of it, there are lots of ways to save energy and to save money and to save the planet. It's not just about being green. It's not just about electricity. It's about water, etc. And let's talk about this, because I think, Donna, you have suggested in many ways that we could be more efficient in our usage of water, and there are ways to do it on the floor here that they're showing us.
That's right. Well, water is a really important resource, and we're actually finding out in North Carolina now that it is the important resource, because we've been through a couple of small and large droughts in the last 3 to 4 years. So using low-flow washers, these are all things you can probably do at home. Use low-flow washers that you put inside your faucets so that you can use less water every time. Using a shutoff valve for your shower and a timer so you can take a long shower but only use 5 minutes worth of water, which if the typical shower is about 2.5 gallons. So if you're just taking a 10-minute shower, that's 25 gallons of water. So just think about how if you could cut that in half to 5 minutes, you can make a big difference in the amount of water and in your water bill. And now we're all being charged for not only the water that we use, but the sewer costs. So it's usually double.
I walked around the floor here, and they have rain barrels on display. This is something that people haven't talked about since the 1930s. My mother used to have a rain barrel. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of glanced at one, and it said $129. And I thought, for a plastic water barrel? Are you out of your mind? Is there more to it than that? Or can you just put a garbage can with a lid on it and make it a water barrel?
Well, you do have to be a little careful, because you want to have an attachment for a spigot so you can actually get the water out and you don't have to dip into it.
Well, that's a dollar purchase with a drill into the side of a plastic trash can. Seriously, do you have to spend $129 to have a water barrel?
You don't have to, although I would think you could be more of a do-it-yourselfer and spend only $25 or $30 and put all the pieces together.
Let's cut to the quick here.
I spent $50 to $60 on each of my 50-gallon to 60-gallon water barrels. How about that?
But if you're in a drought, are they going to work? I mean, there's no water coming into them.
Well, one of the things we did when we were in a drought was we actually would save our shower water. And then we would pour it into our rain barrel and then use it to water our organic vegetables.
How do you save it?
You just put a bucket in while you're taking a shower.
In the tub. Okay. So you're reusing gray water. That's what.
Yeah,
you,
I just I moved it into a gray water system when we were in the real drought.
You also pour it into the toilet tank?
I did that too as well. Okay. Yeah, but I would use it for vegetables first.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm Jay from Matthews, North Carolina. I wanted to know how geothermal works and what temperature does it maintain in the wintertime without the backup,
without the supplemental heat strips.
Right.
Geothermal actually works where there's a heat transfer that typically a hydrochlorofluorine, used to be freon, now it's a different substance, is pumped through a coil at high pressure where it can actually draw heat out of the Earth's surface. As it goes back, as it expands, it loses that heat into a heat, to an air exchanger. And so in that way, it works very much like a normal heat pump. Then in the summertime, it reverses the process. It draws heat from the home, is put back into that liquid, and it pumps back into the ground. More than anything, it depends upon the relative difference between the temperature of the soil and the temperature of the desired in the house. Keeping her example between 58 degrees is no problem. Most people are going to do more like 68 to 72. And then think about how is my envelope performing. If I'm letting in a lot of cold air, then I may need the supplemental heat strips. Mm-hmm. If I've got an envelope that's tight, that is meeting my airflow guidelines, then I won't need as much. And it's very possible you could do it totally geothermal without the backup strips.
Well, do these work better than heat pumps did in the 1970s? I had a heat pump in the 1970s. I was always cold in the wintertime.
I did too, and I said I'd never have one again. But the new ones now are much more efficient. The technology's better. There's a better heat transfer than ever before.
And this includes the geothermal heat pumps. Mm-hmm. Where do you go to get a good energy audit to see if your quote-unquote envelope is a healthy one and not going to cost you money because you're leaking like a sieve?
Well, there are a lot of local companies who will do that for you. People who've been trained, who've been through Donna's
power companies
Healthy
do it
Bill
for you?
Program. No, I don't think so. No, but it's Progress.
Well, I'll mention, I don't think that Progress or Duke now are actually helping you do that directly, but they do give you a 5% break on your bill if you get an Energy Star rated home, if you manage to get to that level. Real briefly, greenprofessionals.org, look it up under Energy Raters, and we have about 30 to 33 professionals.
Greenprofessionals.org.
That's right.
You mentioned Energy Star, and Laurel, you work in promoting Energy Star homes. I've heard of Energy Star appliances. What's an Energy Star home?
Well, an Energy Star home is a package of different efficiency measures, but the best thing about the program is that there's third-party verification. And basically what it is these energy raters that Donna was just talking about go in and verify that all of these things are done properly, that the home its envelope or building shell is tight, that the ductwork that is installed is tight, that you have good windows, good insulation values, and they rate it through a software program. This person comes out, verifies all of these things are completed, and then your home receives that certification.
What does it mean to have good windows? I mean, how do you know if your windows are good? How can you tell?
Well, definitely double pane versus single pane windows. If you're living in a home with just single pane windows, then you could, do something like an air film, if not replace them. But what they call it is a low emissivity rating. A low E window is the best type of window on the market. They have an Energy Star label as well. And what's a bonus, I think, in our state is that our building code now is requiring these energy efficient windows in all new construction. But they are available on the marketplace, and they have a higher R value. I mean, there's not very much R value in a window to begin with, but these low-E windows have a higher R value.
If you bite the bullet and go around your house and realize you only have single-pane windows and they were installed 35 years ago, that maybe you ought to replace them with double-pane modern windows, mm-hmm. Is it worth the money? That's going to be a lot of money.
Absolutely.
To put out. It's worth the money in the long run or the short run?
I would think so. And even if you just start replacing certain sides of your windows, if you have, windows on the east and the west, start there, the north. I mean, just, if you just have to do them a little bit of the time, that's fine. But again, I'll bring up that the tax credits have been extended through 2009 and 2010. So if you do your work in the next 2 years, you can take advantage of those tax credits, 30% up to $1,500.
I have a list of tax credits that you supplied us. and it would be incomprehensible to read this on the radio, but where can people find this information?
Well, I think a really good list that I just found a couple days ago that includes the new information of the extension of these tax credits is the EnergyStar.gov website.
Okay.
And they have a comprehensive list talking about, you know, what low E ratings you need on your window, what SEER rating you need on your heat pump. So it lists all the different, you know, even storm windows are listed on there available for the tax credit, but it's EnergyStar.gov.
I want to get back to water usage for a second, because one of the things, Donna, that you have recommended to people is that if you want to save water, eliminate your grass. How do you...
Yeah, and I'm at the Home and Garden Show.
That's right. So how do you talk about that here? How do you get past your neighborhood association? How do you stay friends with the next door neighbors?
Well, you could put in ground covers. A ground cover is still a plant. You still have to go to the Home and Garden Show to pick it out. But seriously, you know, if you remove your grass, if you install mulch or you use a low ground cover, that'll do a lot of things to help you actually even cool your home, because you might not reflect as much heat toward your home. You won't have as much maintenance potentially. You might not have as much chemicals and water that you need to add to your grass. It really can be a huge time saver. And then you can do like me and you can build some gardens in the middle of it and spend all your time on your gardens.
Very quickly, radiant barriers. These are the thin aluminum foil kind of things they put in the attic now. Do they work?
Absolutely. Yeah, they can help to keep your attic much, much cooler when installed properly. Yeah.
So in the summertime, you can save air conditioning costs because you put these things in?
Absolutely.
Because it's just aluminum foil.
I know, but it saves significantly. My dad actually put it in years ago at home that I grew up in Huntersville and saved on our power bill.
It's actually not aluminum foil.
It looks a lot like aluminum foil.
Developed by NASA for the space shuttle and to keep the space shuttle cool.
Yeah.
Laurel Elam, whose name I will never get correct, with Appalachian State University's Energy Center. Donna Stankus with NC State's Solar Center. And Keith Davis, President of Residential Technologies. Thank you all for joining us today. I appreciate it very much.
And thank you.
And thank you for your questions out in the audience here at the Southern Spring Home and Garden Show.